This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 1st of December 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 1st of December 2017, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now the main headlines this week, hospital scrapped, skaters put on spectacular display at ice rink launch, and March to Save Centre. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is hospital scrapped. Fears have been expressed about the future of Winchester's health services after it was revealed that a new £150 million critical treatment hospital north of the city looks set to be axed. The hospital, a joint venture by North Hampshire and West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Groups, CCG, that would have centralised Hampshire Hospitals, NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, A&E and Critical Care Services between Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke, has been deemed not affordable. The option to build a hospital on a greenfield site near Junction 7 of the M3 was part of a review looking at how to improve community care services in North and Mid-Hampshire. A document released earlier this week ahead of a CCG board meeting being held today outlined recommendations that a standalone critical treatment hospital will not be progressed. The report also recommended that the CCGs continue to develop proposals for the centralisation of HHFT healthcare services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, RHCH, in Winchester. The Andover War Memorial Hospital and North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke, including exploring any necessary capital development to support relocation of services. Lib Dem City and County Councillor Martin Todd said, "It's very disappointing that so much NHS money has been spent on this project with nothing to show for it at the end. Questions need to be asked as to why it all went on so long. The money spent on this project could have been spent on cutting the time it takes to get an appointment with a GP." Councillor Todd added, "I'm now extremely worried about the financial position of our local NHS and care services. The NHS's Sustainability and Transformation Plan, STP, for Hampshire requires HHFT to cut £60 million in costs by 2020-21. At the same time, Conservative MPs, ministers and councillors have decided to strip £49 million out of Hampshire's adult social care budget in 2019-20, which will put our local NHS under even more pressure." Alex Whitfield, HHFT chief executive, added, "We completely support the Commissioner's focus on improving the care that is available outside of hospital. This is great news for the people of Hampshire. We are naturally disappointed that the recommendation to the Commissioner's meeting is not to consult with the public on a critical treatment hospital at this time. The joint work completed this year recognised this proposal and would improve quality and accessibility for our patients, but has concluded that it's not affordable with the current ambitious assumptions around spending less on hospital services. In the meantime, our dedicated and compassionate staff will continue to focus on providing great care for our patients within our existing buildings. If the recommendations are agreed, work will be carried out by HHFT to review the care services at its three hospitals with the aim of developing new proposals by the end of February to reconfigure services." City MP Steve Bryan said, "We have to maintain a sensible and balanced discussion about the future of acute care that, above all else, ensures local NHS is there when we're acutely unwell. My hunch for some time now has been that a new build is unlikely, which, while hugely frustrating, at least gives us clarity."
Skaters put on spectacular display at ice rink launch. Winchester Cathedral celebrated the opening of its annual Christmas ice rink this week with a glamorous opening ceremony. Returning for its 12th year, Deputy Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson officially opened the annual attraction on Thursday, following a spectacular display on the ice by skaters and carols led by the Winchester Cathedral choristers, plus a brief blessing for the ice rink and the Christmas market. Ahead of the official opening, Winchester Cathedral's all-boys choir, the choristers, took to the ice in their cassocks and for the annual skate on Tuesday morning. Sporting an innovative roof and open sides, the rink now guarantees visitors a rain-free skate, while letting them enjoy the ice rink's unique setting under the shadow of the ancient and spectacular architecture of Winchester Cathedral. The ice rink runs until January the 7th. A standard ticket for the ice rink, which includes an hour's skating and skate hire, cost £11.50, and tickets are available from the Winchester Cathedral box office on 01962 857275. I'll repeat that again, 01962 857275. And there are numerous photographs. The first group are of some youngsters all skating with their Santa Claus hats on, and one lady doing a spectacular jump. And there are seven pictures of all the boy choristers in their lovely red cassocks skating around and thoroughly enjoying themselves.
And mine is entitled March to Save Centre. There are two pictures, one of which is campaigners in Winchester City Centre and the demonstrators outside Queen Elizabeth Court up in Winchester. Campaigners fighting to keep an overnight children's respite centre open held a demonstration in Winchester City Centre to garner support for their cause. Hampshire County Council is proposing to close Merridale on Church Lane in Kingsworthy, which cares for young people with learning disabilities. The group of families and friends marched up the High Street and collected more than 700 signatures, ending at the Hampshire County Council offices. An 8-week consultation was held in September on the possible closure, which also considered the future of Sunbeams in Aldershot. As of March 2017, there were 28 users of Merridale and 24 members of staff. Catherine Spencer from Horton Heath, whose 15-year-old daughter Molly uses the centre, said, "Merridale is an amazing place. The team who work there are very special and have developed a great relationship with our daughter. We entrust them with her, and she knows she's being well looked after. A lot of the staff have worked there for many years and have great expertise. The building was built in the 1970s and has a welcoming, child-friendly feel and has a lovely outside space. They have all the equipment which is needed to help care for our daughter and the other children who use the centre. Our daughter has Angelman syndrome. She needs help with all aspects of daily life and has been having overnight stays at Merridale since she was 8. She loves it there and is always there with friends she knows from school and enjoys the chance to socialise with them. The whole family benefits from Merridale. Molly enjoys a fun time with her peers. Her siblings have more attention from us and can do activities which we could not normally do, and we get some rest and sleep to recharge our batteries. We have been offered Basingstoke as one option, which is too far to travel for us and many families. We need a local centre, and Merridale provides this. It was lovely to have so much support and positive comments from those who stopped to talk to us and sign our petition. Our petition is on change.org.uk, I'll repeat, change.org.uk, and we have more than 6,000 signatures online. We have also had a very positive meeting with Mims Davis, MP for Eastleigh, and County Councillor Judith Grajewski. They are supporting us in this fight to stop Merridale from closing and to keep local respite provision. The County Council has said neither Merridale nor Sunbeams is a purpose-built care home for children with disabilities, and to undertake further adaptations would be at considerable cost. The closure will save £450,000 a year on the upkeep of facilities.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, and then letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, and first person, and Belgarum. And then we'll have the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements for this week. Baird. Robert Baird, who died on the 12th of November after a brave battle with cancer, aged 78. Denham. Pamela Joan Denham died peacefully at home in Ringwood, aged 76. Edwards. Alan Edwards died peacefully on the 21st of November. Ellis. Nancy Alice Ellis, who died on the 23rd of November at Fallingbridge, aged 86. Lane, Mary Lane, died on the 20th of November, aged 82. Lee, Terence Lee, died on the 22nd of November, aged 61. Morgan, Stephen Morgan, died on the 20th of November after a short illness, aged 68. Offer, Barbara Joan Offer, died in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 15th of November, aged 84. Page, Roger John Page, who was churchwarden at St John's, Alsford, died suddenly on the 24th of November, aged 70. Quarrenden, Trevor Max Quarrenden, former captain in the Royal Navy, died on the 20th of November, aged 90. Rodwell, Sheila Rodwell, died on the 12th of November, aged 92. And Tier, Quentin James Tier, died on the 15th of November, suddenly, whilst in America, aged just 45. That concludes the death announcements, and now we have Christian comment read by Peter.
Christian comment. Isaiah and a vision for today. The season of Advent is with us once more, and for those who love the Bible, it is time to hear again the inspiration of the prophet Isaiah. It is also the feast of St. Andrew, the apostle, who would have been inspired by Isaiah. It is no accident that Christians consider the book of Isaiah almost as a fifth gospel. All the peoples of the book, Jews, Christians, and Muslims, as well as all who seek peace, are inspired by his words and his messianic vision. Indeed, his most famous prophecy in Isaiah 2:4-6 on nations hammering their swords into plowshares and their spears into sickles is now written on the granite curved wall called the Isaiah Wall in the plaza in front of the United Nations building in New York. Isaiah's vision of sustainable peace summoned wayward kings of his time, in the 8th century BC, back to the original version of their covenant with Yahweh. Then, as now, this peace, far more than a mere cessation of hostilities, requires difficult dimensions, such as a profound sense of repentance, forgiveness, and reconciliation between states, social groups, communities, and individuals. St. Isaiah's vision was also prophetic in being multi-dimensional. His notion of social ecology was profound. "My people go into exile through want of knowledge," he cried. He was truly before his time in recognizing that God's law means respecting ecological principles. So, wounding the earth is ravaging the divine face of creation. This involves us respecting the fact that the land has limits. Pope Francis has warned during a speech to the European Parliament in Strasbourg in 2014 that the world sees Europe as, quote, "somewhat elderly and haggard," close quote. Like Isaiah's call for his people to return to their original integrity, Pope Francis's solution to the problem was to give Europe hope by restoring a sense of transcendence to the human person whom he wanted to see as central, to nurture the gifts of each person through education, not least in the family, which should enable the human person to develop in his or her totality. Christianity should not be seen as a threat to a secularised Europe, but an enrichment. The Pope said the continent felt, quote, less and less a protagonist, close quote, in a world that regarded it with mistrust. I recall the euphoria when Britain entered Europe. As we then lived in Brussels, I drove our pyjama-clad children to see the British flag being flown from the Berlaymont building for the first time. Could the standing ovation which greeted the Pope's speech in Strasbourg stimulate our own corner of Europe to make Isaiah's word real in our lives? Not only is his call to work for sustainable peace crucial, but his vision of redeemed and restored creation, when all creatures live in harmony, is a great gift to inspire our efforts this coming season.
Thank you, Peter. And now we move on to letters to the editor. So, Nikki, you've got the first?
Yes. Headed A Hard Brexit from E. Cleaver in Bishop's Waltham. Sir, Brexit is the future. We take heart from the fact that all our Conservative MPs in Hampshire are active supporters of Brexit and loyal to Theresa May's government. There is one Labour MP. Only three of the Hampshire 2016 referendum polling districts voted to remain, so this part of the affluent South voted pretty solidly to leave the EU. But we need quick disentanglement from the EU to remove the economic uncertainty which has harmed the UK since February 2016. For this to happen, we need unanimous support for our negotiators to gain Brexit as soon as possible. The UK needs to toughen up with the EU to combat foot-dragging. The possibility of a hard Brexit must stay on the table. The Labour Party is ambiguous and likely to play political games at this difficult time. Dissident Tory MPs must be allowed their say, but any action by them to frustrate government policy can only be condemned. A firm exit day and minimal transition period will be best for the UK and for the EU. Anything else is a backward step into the past. And that's from E. Cleaver, Ashton Close, Bishop's Waltham.
Slovenly officers. Sir, I was in Winchester Cathedral for the Remembrance Sunday service and was astonished to see before the start of the service officers of the army in uniform standing around with their hands in their pockets, a slovenly display that was not followed by the very smart NCOs present, not by those representatives of the other services, I am very glad to say. Given that they were there on parade as representatives of the fallen and their regiments, I consider their casual approach to be disrespectful, reprehensible, and certainly not setting a proper example for others to follow. And that's from John Seeger Green, Hospital of St Cross, St Cross, Winchester.
My letter is entitled Speedwatch. Sir, Mr. Keir provides a real example of why both drivers and pedestrians need to exercise caution when driving or walking through the streets of our ancient city. Chronicle Letters, November 23rd. Pavements are often too narrow for pedestrians to pass one another without stepping into the road, and the streets are those used before motor vehicles dominated the city. Mr. Keir describes the damage caused to his car when it collided with a pedestrian at 6 miles per hour. One is left to speculate what would have happened at higher speeds. I am pleased that Mr. Keir finds amusement in the men and women who are offended by the way some drivers ignore the mandatory speed limits in our city and are prepared to stand up to them. Speedwatch volunteers are trained by the police to use the equipment and how to respect the confidentiality of the data they collect. This information is passed to the police, who will then remind drivers that these limits exist to ensure drivers respect the safety and comfort of those who live and walk about on these streets. Perhaps after the results of the current Winchester Movement strategy consultation are known, other resources will become available to make the city a pleasanter place in which to live and walk about in without being intimidated by fast-moving and noisy traffic. In the meantime, we must rely on the Speedwatch volunteers and the common sense and courtesy of some drivers, if not all. And this from Dominic Hickscock, Worthy Road, Winchester.
And from Les Sherry, Kingsworthy. Sir, anyone who has a modicum of common sense can see that diverting the Andover Road traffic through Barton Farm makes no sense at all. Why else are millions spent wisely each year building bypasses for densely populated areas? If the diversion was sensible, those responsible would have been proud to state their reason by now. We can only conclude that the reason is political and not to be shared with the populace. However, common sense will prevail eventually. It might take an uprising of residents and motorists or some serious accidents after the event, but there is no doubt this political decision will cost the taxpayer more than if the right decision had been made in the first place. I wish the Save Andover Road campaign well and hope they are able to save the taxpayer some money as well as provide a better solution for motorists and Barton Farm residents. And that's from Les Sherry, Church Lane, Kingsworthy.
And this is from Ruth Ashton. Ludicrous. Sir, I write in response to your article following the decision by Winchester City Council's Cabinet to reduce the size of the sports hall at the new Bar End facility from the proposed 12 badminton courts to just 8 badminton courts, Chronicle November 16th to 23rd. This would only create 2 courts for netball, basketball, volleyball or five-a-side football, for example, and it is too small for a full-size indoor hockey pitch. It offers no more capacity than the old River Park Centre. A larger hall at Bar End would allow more people to play and could generate more revenue and to help repay the capital outlay. Winchester Netball Club, which has operated in the city for 18 years, has always struggled to secure good quality sport halls for its hours required to meet demand. As a result, we have an adult waiting list and cannot develop a junior section, despite regular inquiries from young girls, who we should be encouraging to take up physical activities and team sports. I have been trying to find a suitable court space to run training and league matches and which adheres to the current national netball guidance. However, many local halls are simply inadequate, squeezing netball markings in to a space that is too small or where the flooring is too slippery for changing direction and sprinting or the equipment is damaged. I know many other local clubs also struggle to secure quality venues, so to limit their opportunities at Bar End seems ludicrous. And as I said, it was from Ruth Ashton, Potters Heron Close, Ampfield, Romsey.
On the same subject, this letter from Tony Wagstaff is entitled, What About? Sir, I read the report on the proposed sports and leisure centre at Bar End and would like to ask you who exactly are the city councillors who make these decisions. It's funny how all revolves around ball or shuttlecock sports. No mention of a dedicated facility for gymnastics, martial arts, dance, or all the other non-ball sports or activities which are gaining more and more popularity. Track and field are outside, with football, rugby, cricket and so forth. Yet we hear nothing about judo, an Olympic sport, or other martial arts that do require space and impact safety matting to practice safely. You never hear any mention of sports other than court games. I think there is a very strong bias in the council towards these badminton and squash facilities and sod the rest. Here's me willing to teach martial arts for free, but can't afford the high cost of hiring facilities. Nothing except court racket games, and oh yes, we must have that. Bias, if ever I heard it. I would be very interested in contacting those city councillors so that I can enlighten them of the need for such facilities.
And from Mrs. Valerie Bennett, Itchen Stoke. Bus travel woes. Sir, sounds wonderful, the new and extra buses, Winchester Alton, in the Chronicle, November 23rd. Spare a thought for those of us who live outside Alsford and have to rely on the 67. 4 buses a day, old and unreliable. Support your bus service to keep it. Twice recently I have stood at Itchen Stoke waiting for this bus at 9:22 a.m. The bus did not arrive. The 2-hour wait for the next one. I cannot take the chance. I missed my train. Who cares about this? Certainly not Stagecoach. Probably just can't wait to freeze all 67 users out of it. That's from Mrs. Valerie Bennett, Itchen View, Itchen Stoke. And there is a photograph of the new number 64, very shiny, lots of people smiling and waving, and four besuited men cutting a ribbon to open this lovely new 64 bus, presumably a mayor with mayoral chains and other ornaments. Poor number 67 users.
Andover Road. Sir, I have to say that I fully support Paul Twelvetree's raising of the issue once again of the closure of Andover Road. From one day, it has always appeared to me to be a ridiculous decision and one that is apparently Calla are against, understandably due to the extra cost involved. Mr. Geddes, Chronicle Letters, November the 16th, refers to the traffic thundering past his house. Perhaps he should spare a thought for the new residents of the development, who may be hoping to move to a more rural community. Who will be on the receiving end of the rerouting through traffic? Of course, by definition, they have no voice. As well as the main traffic flow, there will be the traffic that the development generates itself. Deliveries to the proposed shops, cars coming to the new shops, as well as the traffic movements to and from the new park and ride. This is bound to be a huge safety issue for young families hoping to move to the area. And of course, this in turn brings with it the vast amount of pollution. These issues could well depress the value of the properties and make them difficult to sell in a market which is slowing. Mr. Geddes' point that it will only take a minute or two longer to get from town from South Wanston, I would suggest, is over-optimistic. I would think that 5 to 10 minutes would be far more accurate assessment, and that only when the traffic is not being diverted off the A34 and the M3, and that's from Sue Akin, Village Street, Chilbolton.
My letter is entitled MP Questioned. Sir, how strange it is that Steve Bryan MP chooses to make pious references on Facebook to his religion while opening a food bank for the poor that was not needed before his party cut disability benefits, sanctioned benefit claimants on the sparsest of pretexts, and froze public sector pay. To date, there have been over 1,000 comments, almost exclusively critical, many verging towards the obscene, which mine were not. Yet, I notice that he, or one of his ministerial staff, has deleted my comments and blocked me from further comment. Perhaps questioning his, quote, Christianity, while his government takes from the poor, is uncomfortable for him. This from William Vine, Ilex Close, Kingsworthy.
Now we're going to step back in time, historical items starting 200 years ago. Nikki, thank you.
Which was dated Monday, December the 2nd, 1817. Between 9 and 10 o'clock, on Monday evening last, as a gentleman of Bridlington was returning home from Driffield, he heard a rustling in the hedge in the neighbourhood of Nafferton, and immediately a man jumped out and fired a pistol at him, but fortunately he escaped without injury. A second pistol was also fired without effect. On a whistle being given, one or two more men jumped out of the hedge, but the gentleman's having set off at full speed, he succeeded in getting away in safety. A short time afterwards, a farmer who stopped near the same place, near the same place by three men who were unhorsed and began to rob him. But two other persons on horseback coming up, the robbers made off before they could accomplish their purpose. Another point. Mr. Donnell, a surgeon of Falmouth, has been committed to Bodmin Jail on a charge of poisoning his mother-in-law, and Mrs. Dowding, a respectable elderly lady of Falmouth. And another point. The question under the Act of Parliament for abolishing the slave trade, making the trafficking in Negroes a felony, and subject to transportation, is about to be tried. Some little time ago, the master of a vessel, named J.B. Hannay, was taken into custody and undertook several private examinations at the Bow Street Police Office, charged with being feloniously concerned in buying and selling Negroes to make them slaves. He was then admitted to bail, himself in £1,000, and two sureties of £500, to appear before the Privy Council to be finally examined on the subject. On the day appointed for his examination on the subject by the council, the accused did not appear. Apprehensions were then entertained that he had absconded, and his bail became alarmed.
And 100 years ago, on Saturday, December the 1st, 1917, Alfred Carter, labourer, was charged on remand with being found in the unlawful possession of government property, viz. 12 horseshoes, and pleaded guilty. Detective Sergeant Mabey stated that he called upon the defendant at his lodgings on Monday and under his bed found 12 government horseshoes. Later, he said to the defendant, "How do you account for having under your bed 12 government horseshoes?" And in reply, he stated that he bought them from a soldier. Defendant was fined £1 and the treble value of 9 shoes, £1 and 7 shillings, and £2, 7 shillings in all.
And mine is from 25 years ago, Friday, November the 20th, 1992. Gerald Malone, MP for Winchester and Alton, has entered the row on bank interest rates. He has written to Chancellor Norman Lamont, claiming that he has evidence from a businessman in the constituency that cuts in base interest rates will not help a number of local businesses. Mr. Malone said the policy being operated by National Westminster Bank in the case of a small business borrower in Winchester was little short of scandalous. I have seen a letter from one bank dated October the 16th offering to renew facilities which are comfortably secured against my constituent's home. It is bad enough that the bank is charging a base rate plus 5%, but the bank has imposed a minimum rate of 13%. The next topic. The Winchester Road Safety Council is reminding motorists to have regular tests after a number of drivers were found to have poor eyesight. The council's caravan recently toured the Winchester area and visitors were invited to have free vision screening. The emphasis has been on the over 60s. We did 78 vision tests and 17 people were referred to opticians for further tests, said Georgina Busher, council vice chairman. She explained that 6 local opticians had agreed to offer special rates on tests for referred customers. The tour, which was launched by the Mayor of Winchester, Wing Commander John Nunn, visited rural areas including Denmead, Wickham and Bishop's Waltham to highlight the dangers of driving with poor sight.
Thank you. Back to the present now, and we have Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, "What now for the NHS in Hampshire?" So, what was all that about then? For years, the National Health Service has been wrestling with the dilemma of how to provide top-quality healthcare with budgets that were not keeping up with demand in the face of public pressure to preserve the traditional general hospital. The public was told that one answer was to build a new acute treatment centre between Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover, where desperately ill patients stood the best chance of being successfully treated. We were told there simply wasn't enough money or staff to provide the same level of service at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital or the North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke. These staffing pressures are not going to be eased by Brexit and the departure of trained and skilled staff back to Europe. That idea has now been scrapped for the foreseeable future. So on the face of it, the pressures may appear to be off the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The threat of it being downgraded into a glorified cottage hospital has been lifted. Except that it hasn't. The service has defined savings of £60 million by 2020. Where will that come from? Time will tell, but prepare for the worst. The NHS must lay its cards on the table and be more frank and open about the challenges that lie ahead to acute services.
Thank you. Now, first person, please, Norma.
AI Drives Ahead, or Does It? By Ron Allison. Excuse me. Watching television last week as the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, presented his second budget of the year, I was, as I usually am on such occasions, left feeling more than somewhat confused. It was not until the political and financial experts in the studio were able, with aid of graphics and captions, to clarify and explain what I grasped was being proposed. At least some of it. That, of course, says more about me than it does about the Chancellor, who did manage to include one or two decent jokes and was quite well received. Among his comments was the age of driverless cars is already with us. Perhaps they are not yet in enough numbers for us to notice, but Mr. Hammond certainly caught my attention. It is, after all, one of the latest signs of the advance of AI, artificial intelligence, though I am sure that much else is already well established beyond the empty driver's seat. Personally, I hate the thought of such cars. I love driving. Passing the test and getting my license all those years ago was one of the great moments of growing up, and it not being renewed nearly 60 years later because of my below-par eyesight was a nasty blow. I couldn't quarrel with that decision, though. I trust that in the event of such vehicles becoming the norm, there will still be facilities for human beings to take control of the wheel, not just in a crisis, but simply to enjoy the pleasure of driving. Considering more generally the development of AI, I have to admit to some feelings of nervousness. Insofar as I have thought about it in any depth, I have been doing so in terms of new inventions, better, more remotely controlled appliances, and the sorts of developments we have already known in our own lives. That, I am beginning to understand, is only a small part of the story, and listening to the Moral Maze on Radio 4 last weekend did not provide reassurance. There the discussions were on such baffling concepts as would AI have feelings? Would it be able to empathise, or, putting it in my words, how human could it be? And who would be in control? I enjoy many of the advantages science and engineering have provided for us. I appreciate waking up in a warm house, being able to talk to friends and family around the world at more or less whenever it suits us, and knowing that if I have, say, toothache, the experts qualified to deal with it are on hand and don't hurt that much. It is good that intelligence has led to so many varied experiences, but part of the comfort drawn has been that they are under our management. The writers of science fiction have been visiting other locations for years, of course. Sci-fi, though, has never been to my taste or of interest to me. I know I may have been missing out on a good deal of entertainment, but now it's becoming much more down to earth. That word, artificial, limited my experiences, maybe, but I do appreciate reality and the knowledge that any intelligence being applied at least has its roots in genuine experiences. Give me the real thing every time.
Thank you. And now, Belgaren, please, Peter.
Certainly. This one is entitled Helping Out in the Garden, is accompanied by a rather sweet picture of two little tots in bright red sweatshirts clearing leaves from a lawn. It is always best to get children into the habit of being helpful from an early age. They are certainly starting young in one village near Winchester. Children at Compton and Shawford Preschool lent a helping hand with clearing leaves at a local care home. Residents of Brackenley and Shawford even joined in some raking on their back lawn. Preschool Chairman Fiona Holt said, "It's lifting and beneficial to mix our youngest and oldest generations and rewarding to do a useful job at the same time. We hope our children put some joy into an autumnal chore." Mary Adams, the preschool leader, added, "The benefits of this kind of activity are huge. Children love being outdoors, and a simple task like raking leaves helps promote good physical control and coordination and develop a strong understanding of the natural world." Compton and Shawford Preschool, rated outstanding by Ofsted, regularly visit local care homes, often performing songs to the residents. And the second topic is saving food from going to waste. Winchester Community Kitchen First Bite recently celebrated their first birthday. Every Thursday, St Peter's Church on Drury Street hosts the Food Saving Initiative, which sees a talented team of volunteers turn food that would otherwise be sent to landfill into cut-price culinary masterpieces. Serving from 12 to 2pm, the community cafe sees customers all sit down and eat together. Since first opening its doors to the public on November the 2nd last year, the charity cafe has served 3,360 meals, fed 2,100 people, and saved 1,680 kilograms of food. The equivalent of a female rhino, Belgarum learns. The kitchen recently received £4,000 from the council to extend its healthy eating workshop scheme, Grub Club, which sees schools learn about healthy eating, cooking up some tasty grub, and then sitting down and eating together. Founded by Debbie Lockett and siblings Mary and Richard Needham, Richard, a professional chef, said, "I was roped into it, but love it. The plan long term is to go full time and to get our own space. The council offered us a cheap rent on somewhere in the Brooks, but it was only for 3 months, so we had to turn it down." The team is rounded out by student volunteer Katerina Young and sous chefs Melissa Butler-Smith and Tracy Gunner. Melissa, who started as a volunteer, said that being involved in such a great cause was an amazing experience. "We've become a little First Bite family," she said.
Thank you. And now we have this week's announcements, and we start with what's on. And, of course, we're coming up to Christmas, so there are, surprisingly, one or two concerts. Just give you some details of some. Wednesday, December the 6th at 7:45 p.m, there's a Christmas concert at Itchen Abbas Village Hall. And that's by the Itchen Abbas Choral Society with audience participation. Christmas folk and film music. It's £10 on the door, and that includes some refreshments. Thursday, December the 7th at 7:45 p.m, Winchester Cathedral concert in aid of the Murray Parish Trust and the Breast Cancer Haven. And featuring in that will be David Tennant, Hugh Bonneville, Olivia Coleman and Timothy West. Tickets are £40 and £30 on the door, or you can contact the box office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. On Friday, December the 8th at 7:30 p.m, there's a charity concert in St. Peter's Roman Catholic Church by the Winchester Fusion Choir. And that's in aid of three local charities. And tickets are just £7.50. And you can get them on 01962 889 461. That's 01962 889 461. On Saturday, December the 9th at 7:30 p.m, there's the Barks Christmas Oratorio in Winchester Cathedral with the Wainfleet Singers and Period Instrument Ensemble Florilegium. Tickets are from £24.50 up to £39.50, available from the Cathedral box office, 01962 857 275. And lastly, on Friday, December the 15th, just another reminder, I think we've already announced this, at 7 p.m. is the Winchester Cathedral Carol Concert. It's an evening of musical entertainment with cathedral choirs, and it's hosted by BBC South Today's presenter Sally Taylor. Tickets range between £15 and £40, and again, the cathedral box office is 01962 857 275. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And I omitted lighting up time. Lighting up time ends Friday the 1st of December at 7:47 a.m. and begins at 4:02 p.m. And on Wednesday the 6th of December, it ends at 7:53 a.m. and begins just before 4 o'clock in the afternoon, now at 3:59. And now we continue with items of general news, Nikki.
And this one headed Zoo's Biggest Ever Project. And it has wonderful photographs, which I might describe later. Marwell Zoo has unveiled its multi-million pound state-of-the-art tropical house, its largest project to date. Under its curved roof, crafted with cutting-edge technology, a rainforest and a living laboratory will come to life. Spanning two levels, with views across the canopy, with a waterfall and a forest floor below, guests will experience face-to-face encounters with animals from all six groups: mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, fish and invertebrates. The unique rainforest will also become home to animals including a Linnaeus two-toed sloth, Java chevrotain, crocodile monitor lizard, and a pygmy and pygmy marmosets on their own primate island. There will also be free-flying birds and butterflies, Roti Island snake-neck turtles, and more than 1,000 fish in the aquarium. James Cretney, Marwell Zoo's chief executive, said, "This phenomenal exhibit is our largest and most ambitious project to date. It is designed to be a key guest experience with clear and complementary education and sustainability. It represents a high-quality, novel and immersive exhibit creating much-needed indoor and weatherproof space, adding to the overall standard of the Marwell experience. It will deliver guaranteed close proximity animal viewing while enhancing and setting new standards of husbandry for the species displayed. We really are very excited about this." The treatment of animal waste, dung, excess hay and bedding, and other renewable technologies will provide energy for this and other buildings at Marwell, significantly reducing our carbon footprint and dependency on fossil fuels. This is a very important time in our history. The unique structure, the size of two football pitches, is constructed using the latest technology of ETFE, ethylene tetrafluoroethylene, as used in the Eden project in Cornwall. It is 100% recyclable and allows natural UV light to shine through, allowing some of the world's most unique plants the chance to flourish. The project aims to showcase the effects of climate change, how the energy we need to power our modern lifestyles is generated, and how alternative renewable energy can help humans and animals alike. The Tropical House marks the second phase of the £17 million investment programme, creating improved habitats for animals and a more immersive experience for guests. Marwell Zoo, home to more than 140 species, welcomes more than 500,000 visitors each year to its 140-acre site. The Tropical House, which has cost some £8 million, will open its doors to the general public on March 26, 2018, following an exclusive members' preview event. And there are lots of photographs showing the new building, but mainly showing that it's an amazing system, control panel, and machinery to maintain this heating and the humidity. And they have got some plants beginning to grow and some palm trees, but I imagine it will be wonderful once it's all grown up and finished.
Discovery Centre defies its critics by marking 10 years. A Winchester community hub has marked its 10th birthday despite initially facing scepticism from critics. The Winchester Discovery Centre first opened its doors on November 27, 2007, and was designed by Hampshire County Council to blend a traditional library with the performance hall, art gallery and cafe. In its first decade, the Discovery Centre has seen 3 million book loans, as well as welcoming 500,000 visitors and serving 55,000 cups of tea and coffee a year. Marking the 10th anniversary, the hub welcomed members of the public and dignitaries to an event this week, which saw a cake covering a children's book character presented. A series of free celebratory events open to members of the public have also been taking place this week, including collage art, interactive science experiments, Zumba and salsa sessions. Hampshire County Council Executive Member for Culture, Recreation and Countryside, Councillor Andrew Gibson, said, "Winchester Discovery Centre was one of our first libraries where we blended strong library traditions with modern facilities such as performance art, art gallery and cafe to transform it into a real community hub. A key part of this success is down to the award-winning redesign of our in-house property services team, establishing the Discovery Centre as a versatile space and flagship venue. The popularity of the Discovery Centre is far greater than we dared to imagine, welcoming visitors of all ages for reading, learning, family activities and cultural events. My thanks go to all of our visitors, dedicated staff and volunteers who have contributed to its success. Here's to the next 10 years. The creation of the Discovery Centre in Jury Street saw the restoration of the existing Grade 2 listed former Corn Exchange and Library, which was originally constructed in 1838. Despite opening its doors to the public on November 27, 2007, it was officially opened in 2008 by the Duchess of Cornwall. Critics had feared that the creation of a community hub would have seen a downgrading of the importance of the books due to the additional facilities. And there's a lovely picture of the winner of the Christmas card competition, Isabel Creer, with a group of dignitaries and the aforesaid cake. There's also a picture of the Duchess of Cornwall at the official opening, standing by the novels sign, which rather tickled my fancy. and there was other pictures of the inside of the Discovery Centre, the outside of the Discovery Centre, and the plans of the Discovery Centre.
This subject has already been the This has already been the subject of letters and is entitled Tory MP Under Fire for Opening New Food Bank. Winchester's Conservative MP has officially opened a new food bank in the city, but angry residents have criticised Mr Bryant's involvement due to the government's policies. The Basics Bank branch in St Luke's Church, Stanmore, is the second food bank to open in the city and will act as a new satellite bank, helping those in the area who are in need of their services without having to make a lengthy trip to the Highcliffe branch. The Christian charity provides individuals and families in need with emergency food parcels with enough food for 5 days. Mr. Brine, who hosted a collection point for the bank at his offices until October 2017, said, "I have been working with Basics Bank for a decade. This new branch has been a long time coming. Currently, people in Stanmore in need of its services need to take 2 buses to get to Highcliffe. We prayed for the right place, and it seems it has finally been found. St Luke's, Stanmore and Basics Bank are the perfect combination. I came here today to give it a push and show that the people of Stanmore can have faith in it." Mike Slynn, director of Winchester Basics Bank, added, "I'm pleased that we are finally here and so many good people were present for the launch today. I find it sad that we still need to provide this service to the community, but while it is still needed, we will bust a gut for the people in need." However, some local residents were unhappy with the Conservative MP's involvement. Several arrived with boxes full of food to donate to the bank, with anti-austerity slogans on them in an act of protest. Gillian Connell, vice chairman of Winchester's Labour Party, said, "Government policies made food banks necessary. 120,000 people have died as a result of Tory austerity. Steve Brine is not only a junior minister, but a government whip, so can't claim innocence. But we have struck up a good relationship with the organisers." Local resident Caroline Buller added, "The fact that food banks are necessary in the third richest city in the country is a shocking indictment of government policy. I felt it was an unfortunate choice of speaker, but I fully support the food bank."
New hospice to create lasting legacy for city. Plans for a new hospice based at Winchester's Hospital were under discussion for the first time at the launch of its fundraising campaign. A 10-bed hospice to support patients with terminal illnesses and their families is in the pipeline, with the unused Burrell House next to Royal Hampshire County Hospital set to be refurbished. The hospital's palliative care team and Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust executives were on hand at the Health Focus Talk at the Guildhall to answer questions and launch the campaign to raise more than £2.5 million for the building work. With no hospice in the city, the facility aims to open by early 2019, although the ongoing costs of running the facility are still under discussion. There will be services both on site and in the community, including a hospice at home service to support patients who wish to remain at home in the last few weeks of their lives. Inpatient beds with ensuite facilities and a space for everyday therapy and outpatients. The centre will be run by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, with 30% of ongoing costs coming from charitable funds. Dr. Stephanie Killick, clinical lead for an end-of-life care, said, "When patients are unwell, what is important to them is being close to their family and close to their home. We really can create something that is great and a lasting legacy for Winchester." It was also confirmed at the talk on Tuesday, attended by around 50 people, that the hospital would care only for adults, not children, in order to avoid the duplication of services. Medical Director Dr. Lara Alloway said, "Naomi Haas and Jack's Place do a fantastic job at that. However, what we will be doing is supporting the relatives. It's about filling gaps rather than repeating services." Other questions asked were whether 10 beds would be enough due to the rapidly ageing population, as well as parking. And there is a photograph of Barrel House, which is a rather elegant white house with a colonnaded front and a lot of trees around it. Actually, rather attractive looking house. A very good idea.
The changing face of Winchester. Ian Crump looks at the archives when Winchester was awash with public houses. Although there have been changes through the years, much of Winchester has remained the same. If Jane Austen were to take a stroll around the cathedral or college, she would likely still recognise the layouts of the streets and most of the buildings. Some changes, however, came from the businesses which adorned the roads, including dozens of pubs, which have disappeared from the city over the past century. The Dog and Duck was well situated in a quiet residential area of Wharf Hill, somewhere which was once a hive of commercial activity. The pub was part of a trio of popular watering holes which existed within yards of each other. Patrons could start at the King's Arms on Chesil Street, stroll 30 yards down Wharf Hill to the Black Boy, and then stagger to the Dog and Duck. The pub was torn down early last century to make way for green space, including lawn and trees. Many pubs went the way of being converted into shops, including the new Town Hall Tavern at 160 and 161 High Street. The establishment closed in 1910-1911 when it lost its licence and was turned into a shop. The advent of the motor car proved fatal to the existence of the George Hotel on the corner of the High Street and Drury Street. It was considered by many to be one of the city's finest places to sup. The George was demolished in the 1950s when Drury Street was widened to accommodate the growing number of vehicles. Gone too, not just bricks and mortar, but vistas as well. After the Second World War, the city expanded massively, spilling out into many of the city's estates, including Winnell, Highcliffe, Wick, Hairstock, Tegdown and Badger Farm. An interesting picture from about 1900 shows circus elephants led to the river near the Dern Gate and encouraged in. After travelling for long distance in cages, the cool, fast-flowing water would have been a welcome relief to the amazing creatures. In the background can be seen the city gasworks, which supplied energy for light until electricity superseded it in the late 19th and 20th century. And there is a picture of Wharf Hill with a very prominent Dog and Duck, and the Black Boy is hidden behind one of the buildings in the front, which is no longer there. Very interesting.
National Play Award for Naomi. And my topic is entitled National Play Award for Naomi House. A hospice charity that cares for seriously ill children across Hampshire has won a major national award. The Naomi House and Jack's Place Play Team was presented with the Play Award at the prestigious Children and Young People Now Awards. The awards recognise initiatives from the public, private and voluntary sector that work with children and young people. It is given to the initiative that has done the most to offer children and young people the opportunities to play freely enjoy childhood and contribute to their social, emotional and physical development. Naomi House and Jack's Place employs 6 play team members who support more than 300 children and young people from across the South. The team organise hydrotherapy swim sessions, music therapy, arts and craft activities, games, youth clubs, parties and trips out. Hugh Bromage, play and activities team leader, said, "Done well, play can empower and enrich the lives of every child and young person, regardless of medical condition or disability. My team believe that positive risk-taking, inclusivity, innovation and a person-centred approach can transform short lives on good days, difficult days and last days. We are delighted to pick up such prestigious national award. Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospices care for 325 children and young people from across Hampshire and the South. Opened in 1997, it offers respite, community, emergency, end-of-life and bereavement care."
Driver hurt in incident on A31. Police are appealing for witnesses after a motorist sustained a broken leg in a suspected road rage incident near Winchester. At the roundabout on the A31, near junction 10 of the M3 by Spitfire Link, at around 11:45 a.m. on Thursday, November the 16th, the drivers of a blue Ford Galaxy and a silver Saab were involved in an argument at the side of the road after getting out of their vehicles. The Saab is then reported to have collided with the driver of the Galaxy, a 53-year-old man who suffered a broken leg. It is believed the altercation caused minor delays for motorists at the time. Anyone who was in the area and witnessed the incident, please contact Detective Constable Dan Lewis at Basingstoke CID on 101. Quoting a rather long number I'm not going to bother you with because they'll know what it is.
Planners reject plans to enlarge village home. Plans to extend a village home that used an additional building for temporary accommodation have been unanimously rejected by Winchester planners. The application, which would have seen the changes to the property at 170 Main Road in Coldon Common, faced concerns from members of the City Council's Planning Committee, as well as strong opposition from neighbours. The property has seen a number of planning applications in recent years as part of renovation works, which led councillors to fear that the house would continue to grow. Councillor Richard Izzard said, "It has gotten larger and larger and larger. I would be concerned that it is another extension," with Councillor Theresa Evans adding, "It's too large and there's been too many incremental changes." Councillors also raised concerns that the ancillary building in the back garden would become a permanent accommodation due to its design. Despite a planning application being sought to use it as a temporary accommodation while works were going on in the main house. Councillor Eleanor Bell said, "It's a clearly designed as a 2 semi-detached dwellings. This is back garden development and Coldon Common doesn't need this. I don't believe that this will be a temporary building and in the long term I can't support it," said Councillor Ernest Jeffs. The applications also faced objections from neighbours over drainage. Lisa Davis told the committee, "The dwelling goes against the village design and is a back building. It's totally incongruous with the surrounding properties. There are significant drainage issues on this land. The soil is predominantly clay and water runs from this site onto Main Road and neighbouring properties. Further development will reduce drainage capacity further and increase the problem." Applicant June Ratcliffe defended the plan, arguing that the works were necessary to rebuild the home due to its current poor condition and that the ancillary building would only be used during the works.
This is entitled "Housing Taking Shape in Alresford." Progress is being made on affordable housing in Alresford. The 9-home development at Mitford Road is a City Council scheme to help deliver 600 affordable new homes by 2021. Construction on 6 one-bedroom affordable flats started on November the 20th and should be completed by next June. It includes two semi-detached, two-bedroom homes ready for occupation in January and available through shared ownership, also known as part buy, part rent. Shared ownership is designed to help people onto the property ladder, whether as a first-time buyer or as somebody who wants to return to ownership. Alongside the new housing, other improvements were made to the area, including a re-engineered roundabout to create an area of attractive open space. There will be roadworks in December and January to allow the building of the new flats and widening of the remaining carriageway. Caroline Horrell, portfolio holder for housing and council leader, said, "Mitford Road is taking shape, and I am pleased to see benefit a range of our residents. We are always looking to develop affordable housing schemes, and alongside Mitford Road, we also have new affordable homes at Hillier Way and other schemes planned."
Meeting Mandela's bodyguard. Nelson Mandela's former bodyguard was the guest of honour at a talk to pupils at Peter Simmons College. Chris Lubb, who is now an inspirational speaker and coach, was invited to the college by Upper Six students Abigail Busenzi and Poppy Toon and spoke to a packed audience about growing up in South Africa under apartheid. Staff and students heard that it was simply his height, 6 feet and 3 inches, and his size 14 shoe size that caught the eye of Nelson Mandela, who was so impressed by his stature that he offered him the position as one of his bodyguards. He continued on to say that when he was 9 years old, he wrote letters to world leaders, including Her Majesty the Queen, to help end apartheid. Although he did not receive any replies, when working as Nelson Mandela's bodyguard, he travelled extensively and met a number of famous people, including Her Majesty the Queen. She had indeed written a reply to 9-year-old Chris, which he did not receive, but she gave to him when they met. In the course of his travels, pupils also heard Chris had met President Bill Clinton, Beyoncé, Jay-Z, played table tennis with Coldplay's Chris Martin, and even sung with Michael Jackson. Chris said, "My life began in the rural surroundings of Port St. John's in the Eastern Cape of South Africa. At high school, I discovered I had a gift for speaking and led students in protest against the unjust system of apartheid. This action set me on a collision course with the apartheid regime, so I spent the rest of life involved in the relentless struggle against discrimination. My mission in life is to use my past experiences and passion for people to connect, communicate and inspire positive change." And there's a lovely photograph of rather large Chris Lubb with the students at Peter Simmons College, all obviously very happy and inspired to meet him.
Villagers battle on against plan for thousands of homes. Eastleigh could do so much better. Those were the words of campaigners meeting to discuss their plans to fight the borough's emerging local plan. Action Against Destructive Development, AD, came together to talk about the future housing development and Eastleigh Borough Council's plans, which they say will result in a giant urban sprawl. Eastleigh Borough Council target was to deliver 16,250 homes by 2036, but a previous local plan for 2011-2036 was thrown out by the government inspector back in 2014. The AD meeting at Bishopstoke Methodist Church was one in a series of different locations, including Coldon Common and Fair Oak, which will be impacted by the final local plan. The preferred options of Eastleigh Borough Council, known as Option B and C, would see 5,200 homes built to the north and the east of Bishopstoke and Fair Oak, as well as new shops, schools, open spaces and a new bypass. But campaigner Jean Tildridge outlined reasons the group believe options B and C should not go ahead, including damage to ancient woodland, wildlife and increased traffic. Options B and C have sparked a fierce debate between councillors, residents and naturalists because of the proximity of the proposed development to ancient woodland such as Upper Barn and Crowd Hill Copse Woods and the impact on rare breeds. Ms. Tidridge, who is also a parish councillor for Bishopsoaks, said, "The area is full of incredible diverse wildlife. It's really important that we preserve the local biodiversity. We just think Eastleigh can be so much better." Councillor Tidridge went on to describe communities and local government minister Sajid Javid's announcement that the government would intervene in the local plans development as a curved ball. Eastleigh Borough Council was told that they have 10 weeks to produce a local plan or face government stepping in to do it for them. Councillor Tidridge said, "We don't know if this will be positive or negative for our campaign yet." The Borough Council meets on December the 11th to consider the draft local plan. And there are a number of photographs, but main one is of a very large group of people saying, "No, say no, save our countryside."
And now a topic that's been in the headlines recently, entitled Waste Initiative. An initiative to help people reduce waste has been launched by civic chiefs. Hampshire County Council is inviting applications from organisations for up to £5,000 to support them in delivering projects, products and services which prevent household waste. Councillor Rob Humvey, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "Dealing with waste is a costly business for everyone. Local councils in Hampshire collectively spend £100 million each year dealing with the county's waste, so reducing the amount of household waste produced could make a big difference. We know that some of the best work in waste reduction goes on at a local level, with groups sharing knowledge or providing facilities, and we want to encourage these initiatives and inspire more." In 2015, the County Council launched its Smart Living initiative to encourage people to make small changes to their lifestyles, which would lead to big savings. Councillor Humby added, "The Smart Living initiative has so far made great progress, and many Hampshire residents have taken the ideas on board, reducing the amount of food they waste and donating household items to charity. There is some great work going on, but I know that limited funding can sometimes prevent good work expanding, so I hope that community groups will be encouraged to apply to the grant, and we look forward to seeing the variety of applications we receive. The closing date for applications for the Waste Prevention Community Grant Fund is January the 31st, 2018. For eligibility criteria and information on the grant, including how to apply, visit the Hampshire County Council website."
MP George meets Town Girl Guides. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury visited Bishopswaltham Guides as part of Parliament Week activities that encourage young people to find out about democracy. He met Guides leader Dr. Nicola Gilbert at their hut in Hoe Road, spoke to the group and answered questions about Parliament and his role, global warming and the most famous person he had met. Parliament Week is an important event for schools and organisations like the Guides to learn more about why the House of Commons and the House of Lords are so important to us all, said George. It was really great to meet the Guides and see their enthusiasm for learning more about our democracy and its institutions, and I was honoured to visit. The questions were certainly wide-ranging. I'm sorry I did disappoint a few by admitting I'd never met Donald Trump. George has invited the Guides up to visit Parliament and a date will soon be arranged. And there's a very nice photograph of about 20 of the Girl Guides in their very smart blue and red tops. And George looking very dressed down in some chinos and a sweater, but everyone smiling very happily.
Carer's Charity Cycle Ride. A team of workers from Winchester Care Home have completed a stage of the charity cycle relay to raise funds for vulnerable children. The group from the 52-resident Flower Down Care Home rode from their base in Harestock Road, Winchester, to the Cedars Care Home in Salisbury in aid of the charity Children in Need. The homes are run by care group Brighterkind, and the staff from each of its 71 homes are taking part in cycling stages of more than 2,000-mile route from Inverness to Jersey. The route, which covers over 2,000 miles, runs from Inverness to Bournemouth before culminating in St. Brelade in Jersey. It isn't a direct route because on the way it will take in each of the brighter kind homes. The aim is to raise the minimum of $17,500 for the charity. And there's a picture of these gallant cyclists holding up their banner.
This one is entitled Elderly Residents Trapped in Flats in Winchester. Elderly and disabled residents in a Winchester block of flats were trapped in their homes for more than a week following a delay to the repair of a broken lift. Occupants of Braxton House in Winnell, which is run by Winchester City Council, were restricted in their movement in and out of the building as the lift was out of order for 9 days, leaving them with several flights of stairs to climb. The lift was broken from November the 7th to the 15th, despite the problem being referred to civic chiefs by several people living in the 8-storey block. The tower block is one of four: Braxton, Craddock, Dennett and Earl houses off Winnell Manor Road. Kenneth Gore, 74, who lives on the top floor, told the Hampshire Chronicle that residents were not given information on why they were left in the position of not having a working lift. We have disabled people in the block who couldn't do their shopping. We have people in their 70s and 80s, someone who has just got out of hospital. It's a failure of the duty of care, he said. A Winchester City Council spokesman said, "We are very sorry residents at Braxton House were without a lift. This must have been especially difficult for residents with mobility problems. All of the lifts in our council blocks of flats in Winnell had problems due to power surges, and all but Braxton House were fixed by our contractor. We will be looking into what's happened and learn any lessons that can be used to improve our services in the future." This is not the first time that the lifts in Winchester's tower blocks, which date back to the 1960s, have caused problems. Back in 2012, the City Council refitted the lifts in all four blocks, leaving them out of action for 4 weeks, though at that time some disabled residents were temporarily moved out during the works.
Sex crimes up amid calls for law change. New figures have revealed that sex crimes by adults in a position of trust have risen across Hampshire. Nearly 50 crimes have been committed across Hampshire since 2014, which involved a trusted adult targeting 16 and 17-year-olds in their care for sex. It is illegal for a person in a trusted position to engage in sexual activity with anyone under the age of 18, and despite the government announcing plans to extend this law to include sports coaches, children's welfare charity, the NSPCC, wants this law to include all adults working regularly with youngsters, not just those classed as in a position of trust. According to the charity, the current loophole means adults with regular and intense contact with children in extracurricular activities are able to groom them from a young age and abuse the trust to have sexual contact as soon as the child turns 16. Professions currently classed as being in a position of trust include teachers, care staff and youth justice workers. The government announced plans to extend sports coaches into the current law, but an NSPCC campaign called #TrustToLead is urging the law to include all adults. There were 19 cases in Hampshire from July 2016 to June this year, compared to 6 cases leading to June 2014.
Household carbon monoxide alert. Householders across Hampshire are being urged to check if they have a carbon monoxide alarm installed in their home. It comes after a new survey undertaken by Oil Firing Technical Association revealed that 52% of homeowners across the UK admitted they do not have one. Malcolm Farrow from the association said most people wouldn't think twice about having a smoke alarm installed and households need to take the same approach when it comes to carbon monoxide, especially as the symptoms of the potential poisoning can be hard to detect. Accidental poisoning can be caused when carbon-based fuels don't burn properly in faulty or poorly maintained household appliances such as heaters. The association said constant exposure to the gas can cause long-term health problems. Every year there are around 25 deaths from accidental carbon monoxide poisoning in England and Wales.
slightly lighter note in this festive season. This is entitled Farmer Wins Beer Prize for His Barley. An Upham farmer's festive beer requirements have probably been met after he won a competition. Arable farmer Mark Dunford has an added reason to be raising a glass during the festive season after winning the 750 bottles brewed at St Austell Brewery in Cornwall. Farming around 1,200 acres from Lower Preshaw Farm near Bishop's Waltham, he won the prize in an annual spring malting barley competition organised by Meon Valley grain merchant Robin Apple. The competition aims to find the cream of the crop among malting barley samples grown in the south of England. Growing 400 acres of spring malting barley each year on his predominantly chalky land, along with wheat and oilseed rape, Mark won the competition with a sample from his 2016 crop of the popular spring malting barley variety Propino. "We've been growing malting barley for as long as I've been farming," said Mark. "It's potentially our best earner and works well with our soil and weather conditions in Hampshire. Propino is our preferred variety here. It usually takes the lion's share of our acreage. We were really pleased with how the crop did in 2016. We were absolutely chuffed to win the competition. It was a fantastic day having the opportunity to go down to St Austell Brewery along with Jonathan Arnold of Robin Apple Limited and helping to brew our very own Durnford's Dazzler beer. Creating the beer was a fantastic experience. With guidance from the brewery staff, we helped to create the taste and the strength, testing different hops and choosing which ones we wanted to use. It really was a great opportunity. Naming the beer and designing the label was a proper family job," he continued. "We came up with the name over supper one evening, and the kids helped design the label. They're a bit more creative than me," he said. "We're really happy on how everything turned out. The logo really tells a story, and the beer has been much enjoyed by friends and family. Propino was among the varieties grown on the farm again this season, and Mark has plans to sow the variety again in spring 2018. We've been growing it for a number of years, and I think we'll continue with it into the future. It always does really well for us," he added.
Stuck for Christmas gifts? Think of the great outdoors. With just 4 weeks to go until the big day, you may be experiencing the mild panic and sense of impending shame that comes from having no idea what to give your loved ones for Christmas. Dad's sock drawer is full. The marzipan fruits you bought Nan last year are still festering in the cupboard. And as for your other half, all the Toblerones in the world won't make up for the great Slankit disaster of 2016. Does anyone know what a Slankit is? Because I have no idea. This year, why not try something a bit different? Research has shown that experiences make us far happier than stuff. The novelty of having the latest gadget or a stylish new outfit quickly wears off, whereas a thoughtfully chosen experience can stick around for a lifetime. We at the Wildlife Trust believe there is no gift more precious than the opportunity to experience the natural world. With this in mind, we have organised a huge variety of interesting events and courses for the new year. If you need a gift for a budding Bear Grylls, what could be better than a weekend of bushcraft or a session learning to track wild animals? We have courses, walks and talks to cater for a whole range of interests, from digital wildlife photography to the constellations in the night sky. However, if you're after a more traditional gift, we're working with local artists and producers to sell nature-themed products, perfect for the wildlife enthusiast. Luxury hampers, handmade toiletries, beautiful one-off pieces of jewellery and arts and crafts kits are just a handful of the delightful range of items we have on sale. We really do have something for everyone, and best of all, each and every purchase helps local wildlife. So if you're dreaming of a wild, wonderful Christmas for your friends and family, but don't know where to start, don't get your tinsel in a twist. Take a look at our online shop. You're sure to find just what you need to make this December one to remember. And there's find out more at, and there's a website which is actually really difficult. I think it's shop.hiwwt.org.uk. It's got a hyphen inserted in it because it doesn't stay on one line. It's very badly printed, frankly. shop.hiwwt.org.uk.
Keller helps with safety. A house builder a Winchester school have teamed up to promote a safer school run. Calla Homes has joined forces with Western Primary School to raise awareness of road safety. The company has donated a Be Safe, Be Seen pack, which includes 30 high-vis vests for taking children on school outings, educational activity booklets, and the clip-on reflective badges for pupils to help them to be seen on the journey to and from school. Alison Deakin of Calla Homes says, as part of our work with local communities, we are really keen to partner with Western Church of England Primary School to raise awareness of road safety amongst pupils. According to the Department of Transport, more than 23,000 pedestrians were injured on UK roads last year. Of those, a quarter were children aged under 15. Many of our new homes developments are located close to schools, so it makes perfect sense for us to do what we can to help pupils stay safe and seen as they walk to and from school during the winter months. We hope that reflective badges and vests will reinforce the importance of children being visible to motorists and the needs for drivers to watch their speed, particularly in residential areas and around schools. Peter Burbridge, head teacher of Western Church of England Primary School, said, "Road safety is such an important topic that we would like to thank Calla Homes for their kind donation. The vests would be really useful when taking classes on visits, and the badges went down brilliantly with all the children. The activity booklets are a great way of getting the children to engage and think about potential dangers." And there's a picture of six children in their high-vis jackets holding out their badges with their teacher, who's also holding out a badge.
And this is entitled "Civic Chiefs Suggest Business Use for Former Town Depot." New business units could be in the pipeline for a former depot site in Bishop's Waltham. Winchester City Councillors agreed at Cabinet held in Whiteley to develop a site off Lower Lane, which is already owned by the council, but is currently vacant apart from a single derelict building. The depot covers nearly an acre and is situated in a former quarry. In the past, it has been used as a base to store refuse freighters serving local parishes, but the site has remained vacant in recent years. The plot has previously been considered for a number of development options, including a new fire station and housing, but neither was considered suitable. Members asked for further studies to assess the commercial viability of the site before a final decision is made. Portfolio holder for business, Councillor Rob Humby, said at the meeting in Whiteley, "It's a pleasure to see this type of development progressing in our market towns. This cabinet is dedicated to a full district agenda. I'm delighted that this is happening, as it supported the local economy and demonstrates that business accommodation can be well placed outside the city centre." The council is expected to make a final decision on the future of the site in early 2018. The meeting of Winchester City Council's Cabinet in Whiteley is part of their recent decision to hold every other meeting in a different location around the district to reflect the diversity and geographic scope of the district.
School launches celebration. Children donned wellies and coats to plant over 400 bulbs to launch Diamond Jubilee celebrations at Week Primary School. Pupils aged 4 to 11 years each planted a bulb around the playground yesterday to launch the start of the school's Diamond Jubilee celebrations. The children will be supported by volunteers from the Littleton and Hairstock Gardening Club. Michelle Loughery, head teacher, said, "We have got an exciting year planned for the children, staff and our local community to celebrate our Diamond Jubilee. I would like to say a big thank you to everyone involved in making this event possible, in particular the School Association for donating the bulbs and Littleton and Hairstock Gardening Club for giving up their time."
Shoon Shoe Shop shuts. That's a mouthful for a start. A shoe shop on Winchester's High Street has closed its doors for good. The lights are out and the window displays lie empty in Shoon, which occupied a prime spot at 23 to 24 next to Carphone Warehouse and Mountain Warehouse. A sign in the window simply states that the store had closed, but does not elaborate further. But the footwear retailer went into administration earlier this year, with Shoon's managing director, Mark Pinnock, stating some stores may close with a small number of redundancies. The store joins a number of other well-known and independent brands who have closed down or left the city, including LK Bennett, Zoe, Jewels and Next and Jaeger.
Coincidentally, my next subject also relates to the loss of a well-known store on the high street called Chain Collapses. Upmarket furniture chain Multi York has gone into administration, putting 550 jobs under threat. The retailer, which has 50 stores, including Jury Street, Winchester, will trade until Christmas, while administrators Duff and Phelps seek a buyer. The firm, founded in 1978, will honour all existing orders placed before November the 22nd. Staff were told the news last Wednesday, and the management team will stay in place. Duff and Phelps said economic uncertainty, rising commodity prices, increasing business rates and the fall in value of the pound, which had seen the cost of material increase, caused the collapse.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, it's thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Peter Walker.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.